Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation.
Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation special one-year edition show. Instead of doing quick news today, we thought we'd have a conversation with myself and my co-founder, Mark Corsi, to talk about the significant things that happened over the last 12 months. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Dan. Thanks so much. Good to hear you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm good. So, what do you think we accomplished in the last 12 months?
Actually, I was reviewing and a significant amount, I think, on very different touch points in terms of what we did, where we started, where we are today. I mean, for instance, when we started this before a year ago, when we had the conversations and what we wanted to do and achieve in the marketplace, in the cannabis industry, I think what's really relevant is the cannabis industry is really growing, and so are we.
Mm.
So the fact of the matter is what I was analyzing when we started with four states and 20 markets, and then we rolled on to 11 legalized states and 100 different markets. But then with the additions of 24/7, it was also very significant that what we finally achieved was iHeartRadio picked us up, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. And then with the addition of AM FM 24/7, the fact of the matter is that that audience is over 800,000 in a month right now. And as we discussed earlier, we're going on another network this next Thursday, isn't it? We're going on another network with another 165 stations.
Yeah, October the 8th, we'll expand to 165 additional stations. I don't know, it'll take us a while to start building audience there, but we won't be long before we'll be over a million listeners a month. So we will be the biggest, most widely distributed cannabis show probably in the world on radio. So that's a major accomplishment in 12 months, I think. We've just come a huge, huge long way in reaching out to the audience. And I think that's important. I think it's also important that the quality of the guests have been terrific.
Well, the other thing is talking about the guests, and we were speaking earlier that you have over 200 guests in 1 year that's been on our radio conversation. And I was looking back at some of the significant people with either Matt Barnes or the gentleman from Jelly Belly who went ahead and launched his CBD-infused beans, the cannabis investments, whatever it may be, we've had some pretty big significant people. And you got Big Mike on again this week on our one-year annual. He started with us. But then I also was looking back at our press releases. And the press releases that we've done, I was reviewing those in terms of announcing the network itself, you as host, and then coming in with the first successful month on the air. Then we have our expert commentators that you've created. It just goes on and on. And our format, which is interesting, we decided on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, we have four segments, and we will go ahead and release each segment each day with the whole show coming on Saturday. And so the frequency base on that and building the audience has been tremendous.
Right. And then we added on midweek on Wednesday our America's Cannabis Conversation midweek update, which is the current news up to that point in time. And then we create another current news segment on Saturday. So we're doing and the new network that we're going to be adding will put us on at 7 p.m. Pacific time on Thursday evenings. And we're on, as you said, literally 5 days a week on the individual segments. Then we're on Wednesdays at, I think it's 6 on one network, Thursdays at 7 on another network, AM FM 24/7 on Saturday, and Spreaker also on Saturday. So we've grown our audience and we've grown the distribution in a short period of time.
Yeah, so I think the second year, I have no idea what to expect because we achieved so much in greatness, I feel, the first year. So my congratulations to you, Dan, as the best host that the cannabis industry could have. And the fact of the matter is reaching out all those multiple touch points of different people and the audience with the diversity of that. So my hat is off to you and what you've done and you're able to achieve as, I believe, the number one cannabis host in America.
Well, I appreciate that. We're just about out of time. So if you didn't hear all of this love fest between Mark and myself, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and listen to that. And you can go to the archive section and listen to any of the shows over the last year. Thanks for joining us. And thank you, Mark, for joining me.
So let's see who's coming to the conversation today on our anniversary show. First is going to be Mike Regan, our money guy. He's relatively new, but we're going back to the very first show, and we're going to add Big Mike Stamatios, the more commonly known as Mr. Cannabis in California. Big Mike's going to talk about the fires in California and Oregon and the impact, devastating impact it's having on the growers in all of their facilities. And he's also going to talk about how we can help the growers that have been destroyed. Next is Morgan Fox of the National Cannabis Industry Association, who will tell us about what the cannabis marketplace is going to look like after the November election. Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call, who's been on probably more than anybody else and has helped thousands upon thousands of people. He's going to talk to us about his new practice, about his professional association for doctors and professionals in the cannabis space. So let's get this conversation started. I'm Dan Perkins.
Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us today is Mike Regan, our money guy. And we've decided to take a look at what things are going to look like between now and the end of the year in the cannabis space, especially with an election coming up in November. So, Mike, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to see you, Dan.
Thank you. So, Mike, what do you think is going to happen in the cannabis markets going forward? Are we still going to see this 40% growth rate that everybody's talking about, or is it going to change?
In terms of the growth, I think the outlook is quite favorable for cannabis in general. You have continued rising consumption, not only of people. It's actually been more in more of the mature markets. It's new entrants to the market. It's people coming. It's new people who weren't smoking before or were consuming products from the illicit market coming into the legal market. That's generally what we've seen in terms of what's actually driving the consumption growth. And that's an important thing to remember. Versus other markets, cannabis is unique in that there's actually a huge market already. It's just illegal. So it's the legal market gaining share from the illicit market. In terms of the second half of the year, the more things are going to be on, I think, any legalization catalyst or regulatory catalyst that could come, from the election cycle. Basically, at a high level, the COVID crisis means the government has a need for tax revenue and jobs, and an easy way to basically foster both is to accelerate the legalization that has already happened in many states in the United States. Now, there's already 33 states that have some form of at least medical, and then 11 with recreational cannabis already legalized. So you're in this point where if the government needs jobs and money and tax revenue, they can ease some of those restrictions, and additional states will also see that need and see how the other states have done well that have legalized in some form and then pursue that as well.
Yeah, I noticed I've been following as what's been happening with states that were medical that have added recreational. And in most cases, like Michigan and Illinois, other states, the expansion has been phenomenal in terms of growth rates. And we have a lot of ballot initiatives in the November election of states that are looking to the possibility of permitting recreational use and other states considering the possibility of going to medical. I think you're right in your observation about the need for tax revenue and jobs. But surprising and disappointing, I had an interview recently with the legislative liaison person for the National Cannabis Industry Association, and he was disappointed that the Democratic Convention platform didn't speak to the deregulation of cannabis, and there was a great deal of hope that there was a lot of support within the Democratic Party for that to happen, but it didn't apparently happen. And the convention's going on, and there doesn't appear to be any amendments to the platform, and that was kind of a blow. There's been some discussion about the Safe Banking Act to revise that in the Senate, but again, Mitch McConnell has kind of put his, the kibosh on that, and that's not going to go anywhere. So the legislative process, at least at the federal level, seems to have slowed down, while the state level is continuing to build momentum and expanding and generating revenues. And we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that states can generate. Already we're seeing those kind of numbers through this product. And that becomes really enticing to some politicians to move more rapidly, especially because of the pandemic has done such to shrink the overall economy to negative. And yet, as I said earlier, we're looking at 40% projecting a 40% growth rate in cannabis sales in the United States this year. So you think that trend's going to continue?
Generally, yes. You continue to see, increasing. You see new states, at least starting medical, or states that are medical going recreational. And then even in states where, it has been legal, the growth rates continue to accelerate. They have mentioned this before, but Colorado has seen 20% growth rate year to date in their cannabis sales, and they were the first to go, one of the oldest to go recreational legal back in 2014. And again, that you can do the math and figure out that that's actually new consumers joining the market. So it's people who didn't consume before now consuming, as opposed to, the same people just consuming more and more and more.
Mike, do you think it's possible in your Colorado example, it may not necessarily be new consumers of the product. It may be consumers who have been taking it illegally, who have come over to the legal market, and that the growth in Colorado is a shift in, as you said earlier, in market share from the illicit market to the legal market.
No, that's definitely, when you think about cannabis growth, that's the thing to remember, is there's the huge illicit market that exists. So there's the growth is twofold. It's people shifting from the illegal market to the legal market in terms of the consumption. And then the secondary aspect is additional consumers who wouldn't consume illegally, but now are fine to consume a legal, regulated, more trustworthy product. Viewing it more like, going to the, getting a six pack of beer at the liquor store, it's a more similar experience to that. So that's looking longer term, beyond just sort of if the second half of the year is going to be a specific growth rate, that I think is more that's more the very long term exciting aspect of cannabis is, gaining share from the alcohol, tobacco, wellness, and pharma markets. Which if you add those up, at least the wellness, alcohol, tobacco, and wellness is about $400 billion overall. And that's not including prescription drugs or anything like that. That's a longer term. That's a general thing that comes with legalization as well.
It's like when we had prohibition and you couldn't legally buy liquor, but there was a huge market for liquor and everybody was buying it, but the government wasn't getting any tax or revenue out of it.
Exactly. It had the added cost of criminalization on top of it. So you reduce the criminalization cost, you increase the tax revenue, both excise tax, corporate income tax, and employee income tax, and then also taxing on ancillary services. If you're selling fertilizer to an illegal operation, it might be kind of tough to, you might have questions on how you pay your income taxes on that if you're not even a legal operator. But if it's everything's legal, it doesn't matter, right? So then that all flows through the economy.
Right. Do you see any significant changes in what's going on in the marketplaces the rest of the year? Any changes? Any new players coming on board, or old ones going out of business? What do you see about the stability of the?
Generally, I guess looking at a couple of parts, one state that is hoped and expected to past recreational is Arizona, so you might see a jump from their current medical-only programs to increasing the growth that would come from passing recreational in that state. In terms of other players coming in, I mean, it's interesting. The business has been doing extremely well, and the operators that are, run well and generating cash have been doing well. But there's been this capital drought for cannabis companies in general. I think if so, while it may be a great time to invest if you have the capital, it's been difficult to raise the capital. I think those things could start to change. First, as the second quarter earnings were pretty good for the U.S. focused companies, so that could start to thaw out the frozen capital markets, if you will, for cannabis companies on the private side and the public side as well. And then any incremental progress on either decriminalization or descheduling or legalization, which, remember, doesn't have to be the federal government forcing legality in all 50 states. It can first be the Safe Banking Act, which already passed the House, and as you noted, Mitch McConnell has been holding it up in the Senate, but that just gives the industry access to normal banking services. From the company standpoint, that's a huge benefit where, you mentioned the company borrowing 60%. If all of a sudden you could just go to a normal bank and get a normal loan, all of a sudden you're paying 5 to 10% as opposed to 10 to 20% for, essentially the same capital. Or if it gets rescheduled, you can remove the 280E tax burden, which we haven't gone into, but effectively, because it's illegal, cannabis companies have to pay taxes on their gross profit as opposed to their income tax line, which means, they can pay a 50 to 90% effective tax rate to the IRS.
Right.
So if you could remove that burden, that would be a huge benefit. I just see more states go from medical to recreational or from nothing to at least medical or recreational, then just open up that market as well. So I think you'll start to see more of that, pretty soon.
Okay. We've been speaking with Mike Regan. He's our new money guy. And how do people get in touch with you, Mike?
The easiest way is to go to my website, MJ Research Co. So MJResearchCO.com.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.
It's time for you to make a decision about your healthcare. It's time for you to make a decision on how you're going to protect yourself against viruses. Isn't it time to make sure you have the strongest immune system you possibly can? Isn't it time to make a decision to buy CV Sciences, CV Acute, and CV Defense to help you build the strongest antiviral immune system you can? It's time for you to go to empoweryourself.info and purchase CV Acute and CV Defense and take charge of your healthcare.
W420RadioNetwork.com. Want to find out if cannabis can help your medical condition? It's time to hear from our cannabis doctor on call.
Welcome back to the conversation, and joining us today on this anniversary show is probably the single guest who's been on more than anybody else, and that's Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call. He has a wealth of knowledge and what's amazing about Dr. Tischler is that he speaks in English, which is very important. And he has a message for our listeners about his experience with the show. Doctor, go right ahead.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on again. And I have to say that it's been an amazing year. And congratulations to you and your staff on putting together such a wonderful resource. And I'm just grateful and honored to be a part of it.
Thank you so much. Now, the CDC just reported that the percentage of people in this country that are suffering from anxiety and depression is now 25%. They're talking about the coronavirus and being sequestered and out of a job or trying to work remotely from home. So anxiety and depression, big problem. But
Absolutely.
It's an important part of your practice. Tell us about what's going on with this anxiety and depression and how you're helping people.
Well, I have to say that I'm quite surprised by that CDC report. I haven't really dug into how they come up with those numbers. But it is a shockingly high percentage. And one that I think that, that our medical system is going to be taxed, to deal with. And clearly, you know, we've been so focused on the acute effects of this virus, that we're going to spend a lot of time digging out from all of the consequences of this virus, including, as you point out, the anxiety and depression component. And certainly over the last few months in my practice, we've seen this come up a lot. I mean, we always treated a lot of folks for anxiety and depression, but the current circumstances, as you point out, and the CDC point out, are really exacerbating things. And we've got to get a good handle on this. You know, I think one of the most important things that we have to understand about anxiety and depression is, you know, that some of this stuff is situational, and hopefully that gets better. But that when it comes to cannabis medicine, it can be helpful. But it's also important for us to understand that sort of not just any approach to cannabis medicine will do. And in fact, sort of the common knowledge approach, which is, you know, I might sort of glibly say, you know, whenever you get to feeling anxious or down, you just smoke some weed and deal with it that way. We actually know from a number of studies over the years that that approach can be counterproductive. It can actually make the anxiety and depression worse. Not to mention interfere with activities of daily life and productivity at work and all of those sorts of things, learning at school. So when we think about using cannabis in this sort of clinically proven and best practices way, what we find that works best is very low dose and given typically in the evening or before bed so that the intoxication phase, right, the getting high that comes with cannabis, actually wears off during the evening or over the course of the night, and yet the effect of taking that cannabis dose persists throughout the next day, controlling the anxiety and the depression. And that's a very successful model, but it's not the one that you kind of hear about from your friends or from the dispensary. And what we know, of course, is that the higher dose and the daytime use models that are more commonly discussed are actually more harmful than beneficial. So, you know, we really need to get that word out there, particularly as people are suffering so much, that this can be helpful, but that we have to do it with care and thought and attention to the detail so that it doesn't end up becoming a problem in its own right.
Well, thank you for that. And that's one of the reasons why I have you on the show, because you give us practical advice. You know, I was listening to what you were saying, Doctor, and one of the things that struck me about what you said is that we have spent so much time as a medical community working on the virus itself and the symptoms of the illness that we've not spent enough time dealing with the anxiety and the depression. And it sounded to me like what you were saying is that we're behind the eight ball, and it's going to be difficult for us to catch up. Is that a fair assessment of what you were saying?
I think, you know, in fairness to the world and the state of it, you know, we have to prioritize, right? First things first. Right now, we have to deal with the fact that there are people who are getting this virus and dying from it, and figuring out sort of both the acute medical as well as the sort of public health virus containment spread of things. So I think, you know, we're on the right track there, but there's going to be consequences of this pandemic that go far beyond simply the acute infection itself. I mean, we're seeing people who have recovered from COVID have ongoing medical problems related to their infection. And similarly, I think, as you're pointing out, we're going to see groups of people who never got COVID, the virus, but who sort of got, you know, a reaction to all the stuff that's gone down around the virus, all the worry and all the loss of jobs, or even worrying about loss of jobs and the social isolation, and all of those things are absolutely going to and are having an effect. So that even if we could make the virus magically go away tomorrow, we're still going to be paying for this, and I don't necessarily mean specifically in dollars. I mean, as a society and emotionally, we're going to be recuperating from this experience for years to come. You know, think about 9/11. We're still talking about 9/11. We still have people who are traumatized by 9/11. I have one patient in particular who was to be on one of those flights and wasn't. And so, you know, this is an ongoing problem, and we're going to be facing the consequences of this illness, even in this non-biologic sense, for quite some time. And I think we have to kind of gird up for that experience and be prepared to deal with it as we finally, in the hopefully near to medium term future, get control of the virus itself. Then we're going to have to start, you know, picking up the pieces, and we have to be prepared for that.
I absolutely agree with that. I want to ask you a follow-up question. If we look at the timeline of where we come from, when it first started to explode and expand, we had all kinds of outlandish predictions of mortality and death rates, and now we're 9 months, 8 months into the, and we're seeing that actually the most vulnerable group that would have the highest percentage of mortality are elderly and people in nursing homes and people who have pre-existing conditions. But if you, I think what you said there was so important, because even if you don't get it, you can get the fallout from it. And that's where I think that's where the anxiety and the depression is rising, is because people are wondering. And I think, doctors, I've been writing about this in commentary. I think there are a lot of Americans who don't understand that the vaccine is not going to cure people. It's not going to cure people who got the virus. It's simply a mechanism. I think people think, okay, we get the virus, we're good to go. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. We in May we had 75% of the people said they would take the shot. Now we have an early September survey. 51% are interested in taking the shot. Now, there are some people say that that's political, because some of the people on the left have been attacking the vaccine. But that also adds to the anxiety. And I think it's the well people that may have huge problems with the anxiety. And I wanted to go, are there particular styles, types, of cannabis that would work in your practice that seems to have worked better than others in dealing with anxiety and depression?
No. And sort of the longer answer to that is the, you know, there's a lot of discussion about the different types or strains of cannabis that are out there. But we've never shown any actual difference in medical outcomes based on that. So when people say, well, what strain should I get? What I tell them is this. The strains really don't matter. And they're really a marketing tool that the industry has in order to keep people coming back and buying more and trying different things. What I tell my patients is that what you really want is sort of middle of the road, medium potency cannabis, right? And so as you and the listeners know, a lot of the strains have super high THC content, you know, 20 to 30, maybe even over 30% THC. And what we've learned scientifically is that while the THC is the main medicine, it doesn't work very well by itself, and it needs sort of the other chemicals that come with cannabis in order to do its job properly. And so the implication of that is that if you have a strain that has higher percentages of THC, then sort of by the definition of percentage, it has lower percentage of all those helpers. So we need something that kind of has the right balance. So I advise my patients to look for cannabis that has between 15 and 20% THC. And that is just sort of a general guideline and a way to choose a strain that isn't based on, you know, the name or, you know, some write-up written by you know, your kid's friend or something like that, you know. And within the bounds of that, I find that cannabis works pretty well regardless of its type.
Well, unfortunately, Doctor, we're running out of time. So let's have you tell our audience how they can get a hold of you and your practice and take advantage of telemedicine that you offer.
Great, thank you. Yes, as you mentioned, we do a lot of telemedicine. In fact, we are exclusively telemedicine now in the time of COVID, and take care of patients throughout the U.S. and around the world. So if anybody's interested in reaching out to me, you can go to my website, which is inhalemd.com. Again, inhalemd.com. And we've got over 100 articles there written for everyday people that kind of give you an idea of where we can start. And then, of course, you can reach out to me through the website, and we'd be happy to schedule a consultation.
Thank you, Doctor, for joining us today in the conversation.
My pleasure.
Hello, this is Dan Perkins from America's Cannabis Conversation, and I'm here to talk to you about CV Sciences, the company that developed the immune system support products called CV Acute and CV Defense. One of the questions I asked the company was, how safe and effective are these products? Recently, I interviewed Stuart Tonk on my show, and here is his response to my question.
Science supports it. CV Acute and CV Defense are backed by research, cited by the World Health Organization for immune system challenges. It's safely used in hospitals. That's right, CV Acute is safely used in hospitals in Europe and in China.
If you want a productive immune system, you need to purchase both CV Defense and CV Acute. You can find out more information about both of these products at empoweryourself.info. Empower yourself and take charge of your response to COVID-19. You have the power to control yours and your family's health care.
Hello, this is Stuart Tomp with CV Sciences, Senior Vice President of Business Development, and Dan Perkins, congratulations for America's Cannabis Conversation 1 year anniversary. This is a remarkable contribution. You are a remarkable contribution. I've been a guest on talk radio for 20 years. This show is special. You bring depth, rigor, history, journalism, professionalism to one of the most debated topics on earth, cannabis. Congratulations for a job well done.
Welcome back to this anniversary edition of America's Cannabis Conversation. And our guest now is Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association, who is, if not number one, is clearly number two in terms of the most appearances over the last year because of the importance of his organization. And Morgan, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thanks again for having me, Dan. I can't believe it's been a year already.
Yeah, it's been a year, and a lot has incredibly happened in that 12-month period. And we've tried to stay on top of it, and with your help, we have been able to do that. So what have you, anything particular stick out in your mind as something that you thought was important that was done, that we did during the last 12 months?
Oh, I mean, aside from coverage of the historic passage of the Safe Banking Act in the House, you know, I think that a lot of the issues that we've discussed, particularly relating to the pandemic and how it's affected the cannabis industry, have been really important.
Oh, I agree. I agree. We try to bring as much different diversity to the program as we can, and you have such a wealth of knowledge from your industry on so many different facets, and we've had people from your organization also on the show. What we're hearing, Morgan, is that more information is a good thing, and the more widespread the information is, the more in-depth it is, people seem to are thirsting for more knowledge on cannabis and what's going on. Do you find that to be true also?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, interviewees are only as good as their interviewers, so it's good that you're asking the tough questions.
Okay, so let's move on here. We had a hopes dash just before the beginning of the presidential debates when the House leadership decided they were going to postpone the MORE Act and believe that they'll bring it back after the election. And I guess my question I would like to ask you is, do you, if nothing changes in terms of the administration, if Biden doesn't get the White House, will the Democrats bring it, especially if they control the Senate, will they bring it back again?
Oh, I think it'll come up for a vote in the House no matter what happens, regardless of either the presidential or congressional elections. You know, the Congress, the House of Representatives as it currently exists is very supportive of this bill. We've seen dozens of additional co-sponsors just in the last couple of months. And, you know, you look at their constituents support legalization by a 2-to-1 margin. So there's a fairly certain that this bill is going to be brought up after the election. You know, how soon after the election, I think, is difficult to say. You know, there may be a lot of things distracting Congress at that moment. But I'm very confident that it will be brought back up for a vote. I don't think it's going to come up for a vote in the Senate. Again, regardless of the outcome of the election, I just don't think that Mitch McConnell has any appetite to see a vote on any standalone cannabis bills before the end of the year. But that being said, I think House passage would be an excellent launching pad for work in the coming session next year.
You know, it's interesting the rationale that was presented by the Democrats as to why they wanted to postpone this seems to be, if I'm allowed to interpret it, seems to be at odds with what you just said. If there is a significant 2-to-1, as you articulated, support for passage, why would the Democrats say that some seats may be vulnerable and therefore we're not going to vote on it? What was the logic there?
Well, there are a lot of other issues for most voters that are more important than cannabis, coronavirus relief being a chief one. And I think that a lot of lawmakers were really worried that if they passed such sweeping and very, very noticeable legislation without first coming to a deal on a next coronavirus relief package, that people on both sides of the aisle would take a lot of heat from their constituents. You know, I think that that a little bit outweighed the desire of House Democrats to pass something related to criminal justice reform before the election. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not their fears were accurate, I think it's impossible to say at this point, but, you know, here we are. And, you know, I'm, again, very confident that we're going to see a vote on this bill in the House this year.
The a lot of people have been talking about, and I've been interviewing people talking about, that the game changer in 2020 will be the fact that most of the states decided that cannabis dispensaries, both medical and recreational, were important businesses to keep open. And so what happened was that by saying that they were essential businesses, they gave some legitimacy, more legitimacy, to the proposition of changing the rules on cannabis. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if there was ever any question about the legitimacy of the cannabis industry before now, there certainly isn't any more, except perhaps among diehard prohibitionists. I think that in the long run, we're going to see the acceptance and willingness of state and local governments to work with cannabis businesses and to declare them essential in almost every case is really going to help with the relationship that these businesses have with lawmakers and regulators going forward, as well as providing a lot of rationale for other states that are considering these laws. And when you look at the fact that we've got another five states that are going to be considering cannabis-related ballot initiatives in November, we might be looking at a significant bump in the number of people who are legally allowed to consume cannabis in this country. And that is going to have an effect on the electorate, on how cannabis bills work out in the future in Congress, both at the state level or as well as the state level. You know, this is going to be an exciting couple of years, and I think largely because of the acceptance of cannabis businesses as a means to continue to provide uninterrupted health care and save jobs.
Do you think, Morgan, that the idea that this is an essential business, but the other idea is why cannabis needs to be expanded, is that given the state of the economy and the budgets in many states in the federal government, the incremental tax revenue would be significant enough to make a change in the deficits in the budgets of the states?
Well, you know, obviously states are going to be very hungry for tax revenue, and you know, the cannabis industry is an excellent source of it. But when you look at the cannabis industry versus a lot of other industries, I mean, the amount of tax revenue that it generates is not really going to be enough to, you know, completely bail out state budgets. But at the same time, it will provide a steady revenue stream for the state and will be able to help them make up for some shortfalls that are occurring because of depression and recession in other businesses and industries. And I think that beyond tax revenue, the simple job creation aspect of it is really important, considering how much unemployment we're looking at right now.
I have one last question in this segment with you. There are people who are saying, going back to the MORE Act, there are people saying that the magical number is 26 states approving recreational marijuana. When that, if the federal government has not change the law, the pressure with 26 states actually making it legal will put tremendous pressure on the central government to have to capitulate and make it legal. What do you think?
Well, I mean, if you're looking at it just on a technical basis, that would be enough to have a majority of the Senate. But typically, you need more than a majority. You need 60%. 60 senators on board. So I think that it would probably be closer to 30 states would provide a more or less veto-proof majority. But that doesn't mean that senators are necessarily going to support the policies of their constituents. And just because a state has legalized it doesn't force a senator to vote for sensible policy reforms that would help their states. So we might see a few holding back, particularly in some more conservative states. But, you know, I think that it's also possible that we could get something passed without there being that many states to have passed adult use laws. You know, there are a lot of senators from and representatives as well from states that don't have regulated cannabis markets that still support sensible reforms.
Well, unfortunately, Morgan, for this segment, we're out of time. Tell the people how they can follow what your industry is doing and what you're doing.
Well, you can find the National Cannabis Industry Association at thecannabisindustry.org. We're also available on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram.
Thanks for joining us today, Morgan. W420RadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Conversation, and joining us today on this anniversary show is probably the single guest who's been on more than anybody else, and that's Dr. Jordan Tischler, our cannabis doctor on call. He has a wealth of knowledge, and he has a message for our listeners about his experience with the show. Doctor, go right ahead.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on again, and I have to say that it's been an amazing year, and congratulations to you and your staff on putting together such a wonderful resource, and I'm just grateful and honored to be a part of it.
Thank you so much.
America's newest and fastest-growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome back to the anniversary show of America's Cannabis Conversation. And joining me right now is the first guest I ever had on this show a year ago. Big Mike.
It's a mouthful. That's why everybody calls me Big Mike, because it's a lot easier to say than my last name.
Big Mike, the grandfather or the godfather of cannabis. He's in California, and he also has an operation in Oregon. And I wanted him on for a couple reasons. One's because he was first, but two, he knows more about what's going on in this industry than anybody. And I wanted to find out how the fires in California and Oregon were affecting the cannabis business, how it might be affecting him, and what his prospects are going forward for his business in cannabis. So welcome to the conversation, Mike.
Glad to be back, Dan. The fires are still raging in California. In Oregon, they've been suppressed because they've had rain, and that's a good thing. And so the fires are being contained, and they're being able to make a difference. But in California, it's just still going. The wineries are burning down now. It's a tragedy, actually, because a lot of growers have lost their crops. Not only that, but the smoke that's in the air covers the sunlight from hitting the crops. And right now, it's essential that they get a lot of sunlight. Otherwise, they start getting a lot of diseases, botrytis and molds and stuff like that, as well as the ash that gets stuck onto the buds. And the smoke smell, like, some of that will be able to be remediated and turn into distillate, but a lot of it, the crops are wrecked for the year. It's not a good situation.
If you look at what's going on in those two states, the fires are coming down in Oregon. Is the crop gone in Oregon for this season?
A lot of the crops, the biggest growing area in Oregon, which is the southern counties of Oregon, have been devastated. And right now, we don't know the extent of the damage. We know that a lot of places have burnt down and are in desperate need of help. The aftermath has not been calculated yet because it's still going on. So it's going to be about another week till we find out the complete damage that was done.
So when we look at Oregon, what percentage of the total supply in the marketplace in Oregon came from the areas that's under fire? Would you guess?
For the state of Oregon, probably 30-40% is going to be affected, maybe even more. Like I said, we don't know the numbers yet. And in Northern California, it's just devastating. And we don't have any idea of what the percentage is right now because the fires are still blazing away.
So if you look past the fires, Mike, what is the damage going to do to the price of raw cannabis?
More cannabis has been grown this year probably than any other time, and I'll say that because I know what our nutrient sales are, because people were locked in the homes for this pandemic of COVID and also the stress of what's happening with the economy because of the lockdown. Cannabis use has gone sky high through the roof. We cannot even keep up the production. There's a waiting line for our, unfortunately, for our nutrients. We're making upgrades in our factory now to literally quadruple, five times production right now. And it's gone through the roof, the production has. That being said, the usage is extremely high, and it's going to force the price of cannabis up. There's no doubt about that.
So we have a lot of ballot initiatives in various states around the country adding recreational to medical marijuana. And it'll be a number of states who would probably then want to increase their capacity because of they've expanded into a new market. Does that put even more pressure on your manufacturing capabilities?
It is. It's in a way it's unfortunate because of what's happened with the fires. For business wise, people who are in the what they call the picks and shovels part of the business that are the supplies. Everyone has got or is experiencing shortages and delays in getting product to the growers that they need.
Your business is going through the roof. I understand from your assistant, mm-hmm. You're on your third round of hiring to expand your capacity.
Yes. Oh yeah. We've hired 80 new team members over the last 7 weeks, and we're hiring 80 more up in Woodlands, Washington. That's where our major production facility is, and we're opening up a facility down in Las Vegas as well for our powder nutrients and our organic line as well. One of the things that we are doing is helping the growers. We started a fund. We're putting up $250,000 in cash and $250,000 in products to be split between the states of California and Oregon to help the growers out this year.
Can our listeners contribute to that fund, or is that restricted?
They can go to we're doing it through joinhumanityheroes.org, and they can go out to the site, and if they want, they can donate. Absolutely.
Wow. So not only are the crops gone in some of these areas, the buildings are gone too, right?
Oh, everything is gone. The crops, farms have burnt down to the ground. These folks have lost everything. So we're going to do as much help as we can. One of the things, you know, I believe in a business that is being successful has an obligation to give back directly to the community in which it gets its money from, and as well as society as a whole. And this does both at the same time.
Where as a founder of this industry, when you and I talked a year ago, did you anticipate that nobody could anticipate the virus? But did you anticipate
No.
another 40% growth year?
Well, our company has been growing over the last 21 years year over year, an average growth of 35% per year. Now
Wow.
we have
Wow.
literally doubled in the last. I've been up there every week for the last 18 weeks. I fly up every week to Woodlands facility to oversee the expansion and the equipment improvements that we need to meet the demand. I believe that this demand is going to go on for another 4 to 5 years because we're going to go into
Wow.
the worst economic downturn that I think this country has ever seen since I've been alive. I've been through 3 major recessions, and every time I've been through a recession, our business has grown. This is not only the COVID pandemic, which psychologically has impacted people, but our government has printed trillions and trillions of dollars. And I'm not, you know, an economist or anything, but I do know the laws of supply and demand. And when you print that kind of paper, that's going to be inflationary. And they say that 40% to 50% of all small to medium businesses are now out of business right now, are going to go out of business. So when you look at those numbers and those statistics, it's not going to be good, and the stress that it's going to cause on the people, the fact that they're using so much cannabis right now, they're going to keep on continuing through the next 4 or 5 years. And I say that because the Great Depression lasted 4 years, and I just hope by God it's not that bad, but all indications are pointing that way.
If you look at what's happening at the expansion, I mean, we have, I think the last number I saw, Mike, and you would probably have a better number, but the last number I saw was they were looking for around $19 billion in sales this year in 2020, possibly going to $25 billion in sales by 2024,
mm-hmm.
just mm-hmm. three years from now.
Yes.
But if we look at that revenue, Mike, and the relatively small number of places that we have for recreational to start with, we have a lot of more medical. But the recreational appears to be, from what I've been following in Illinois and other places, just exploding in terms of sales versus medical. So we've still got a lot
everywhere
of states
like,
that we don't have. We have a lot of states that still have recreational. New Jersey's going to do that. Work on that in the November election, and the talk is that it will probably pass. But let me ask you, in the few minutes we have remaining here, what do you think is the likelihood of decriminalization?
I think legalization is 100% after the election. I think because of the economic downturn that we're going to go in, my belief is that Republicans or Democrats, doesn't matter who gets into that office, are going to have to look for other revenue sources, and taxing cannabis would be just that for them. I know the government has proposed already, they already talked about a 5% sales tax federally on cannabis. So my guess is probably 2 to 3 years at the most, it will be legal here in the United States.
Yeah.
And the demand has never been higher. And by the way, the black market is still the biggest market in cannabis in the United States by far.
Yes, I know. If we, I'm still amazed at that. That they put black market stores right on the same street corner as a legal store, and nothing happens. But anyway, so what are you seeing as we decriminalize? Will you see the black market or the illicit market decline, or will it still be strong?
Yeah, that's interesting. So if the feds get involved, and they will, just like the moonshiners, no one messes with the federal government and their collection system of revenue. Right now, the black market's thriving. When it goes federally legal, watch what happens. The federal government get real serious about that and crack down very, very quickly on that. And it will it will start moving to a legal market, and the black market will get pretty well extinguished over time, just like you did with the moonshiners. I mean, you still have a few moonshiners up. You're still going to have some black market people, but the writing's on the wall, because when the federal government makes it legal, that's it. This is a matter of time.
So do you believe that the cannabis legalization of the cannabis market can add significant tax revenue to the states and locals and the federal government?
Oh yeah, especially like when the feds get into legal and the black markets gets more and more reduced every year, it's going to be more and more tax money for all the states and the federal government as well. But the problem is going to be, do enough states are going to give out enough licenses, do the right thing, and get enough growers going and open up enough dispensaries to get the medicine out to all the patients and people out there who need it. So right now the black market is meeting that demand. So the legal market's going to have to step up, and the laws will have to step up for that to happen as well.
Tell us again a website for your company so people can see what you're doing and where people can make donations for this organization to provide funding and product for burned out farmers.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You can go to advancedroutines.com if you want to find out about our product line, and joinhumanityheroes.org to find out more about what we're doing for the California wildfires while we're helping out.
It's always a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show, and I thank you for giving me so much time. Thank you so much for joining us on America's Cannabis Conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation. You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com.